So today, Senator Hur and I have discussed this, and so we're going to walk through the bill, and we've asked our staff to go through the bill, and I think we're going to start with the finance part with Mr. Hagemeyer and Mr. Mueller probably going back and forth, or however you like to do. So, Mr. Hagemeyer, go ahead when you're ready, please.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, yeah, Mr. Mueller and I will split off a little bit here. I'll probably start the first few articles and then trade off during the arts article. We'll be using the spreadsheet on the bottom right corner, or titled Legacy Finance in the bottom right corner, dated 4/19 at 4:29 p.m. I'll do very high level for the first articles because the bills are very similar, but I'll point out the couple differences that there are. Generically speaking, looking at the spreadsheet, we're starting on Article 1. The first on the left side says the project name, and then the category it's in, the agency that does the administration. A lot of these are grants to Outdoor Heritage, so you'll see the agency that the appropriation goes to. The sub-grantee is the next column over, and then you'll see the three sets of columns that have numbers in them. The first set is the House provisions, the bill that passed the House, and then you'll see change from, in this case, the Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations, a line for the change from the Senate, and then the last set of columns you'll see are the Senate provisions that passed the Senate, and then the changes from those organizations as well. Both bodies carried the Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations for the appropriation levels. If you go to this third page, is the first change that we actually see. On line 105, the House added an additional carve-out of the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program. Traditionally, there's been a carve-out for the seven-county metro area. On line 105, the House added a $3 million carve-out for new grantees. Otherwise, all the appropriations are at the same level. And then if you look at line 116, you'll see both bodies appropriated $171,790,000 for the biennium. There is one fiscal year 25 appropriation. That's just for the administration, for the LCC, for the Outdoor Heritage Council administration budget. And they left a 6% reserve. The Outdoor Heritage Fund is the only one that has the annual recommendations. The others have a biennial recommendation. Starting on line 121 is the Clean Water Fund. Again,
Mr. Hagemeyer,
yes.
Just 1 second, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm not the only one that's having a hard time hearing him, but can you go
ahead and
talk
to him? Sure. I can talk louder as well.
Oh, that's perfect.
Okay. Sorry about that. Starting on line 121 is the Clean Water Fund. That was Article 2 of the bills. Again, both bodies carried the Clean Water Council recommendations with a revised recommendation that was made after the February forecast. The first and really only change you'll see is on the bottom of page 3 for line 140, the River Watch program. The Senate added a carve-out to the continuing river and lake monitoring and assessment efforts to meet the 10-year cycle of $163,000 per year carve out of that. And again, all the other appropriations were at the same level for both bodies. You'll see on line 205 are the total appropriations. Both bodies appropriated $318,396,000 for the biennium, and that left a statutory required 5% reserve for the fund. On line 210, you'll see Article 3 of the bill. It's the Parks and Trails Fund. Again, historically, the three groups that receive grants are the state parks, the metropolitan regional parks, and then the greater Minnesota regional parks and trails, and they have gone by a 40-40-20 split. Both bodies generically carry a 40-40-20 split with just slight differences in the appropriation levels. Some changes were made to hit the exact percentages and the reserve rates and such. On line 226, you'll see both bodies appropriated $136,600,000. The House had $610,000, the Senate had $614,000. And again, this leaves a 5% reserve in the fund. On line 231 is the start of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and this is where you'll see more differences starting to show up. And then if you flip to the next page, are the numbers start, you'll see under the Senate column there's an additional column. That's fiscal year 23. There were some recommendations in the governor's budget under the Historical Society, so that's where those are carried there. And they would just reduce the amount that carries forward into fiscal year 24 for appropriations. So you'll see the total appropriations for fiscal 24 and 5 slightly more for the House compared to the Senate because they're spending some of it in 23. For the State Arts Board on line 234, there's arts access initiatives. The House has $39 million for that, and the Senate has just over $72 million, of which the House had a carve-out of $100,000 for free access days. On line 237 is arts education. The House has just under $12 million for that appropriation, and the Senate has $13.5 million for that appropriation. On line 238 is arts and cultural heritage grants. The House has $4 million, and the Senate has $4.5 million. On line 239, the House added a new appropriation of $5 million for significant public arts installations celebrating Minnesota's culture and heritage. Up to 3 grants can be awarded under that pot of money. And then you'll see there is a line for an administrative budget. We can get into that in the language. I believe both bodies are at 5% administration now. And then you'll see on line 241, the regional arts councils. In the House took a different approach and directly appropriated the money for the regional arts councils, and the Senate has a carve-out of 30% of the other appropriations that are funded that may be used for the regional arts councils. In total, the House appropriated $96.6 million from the Arts and Culture, or for the State Arts Board, and the Senate has $90.2 million for the State Arts Board. And then I will pass off to Mr. Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, I'll start off with the Historical Society. To start off, as Mr. Hagemeyer mentioned, the Senate reappropriated just over $3 million. You'll see that on line 255. In fiscal year 23, this was money that was inadvertently canceled from the previous biennium. So the Senate reappropriated this just over $3 million and broke it off into the 3 categories of statewide grants and history partnerships, and then the archaeological sites. Overall, the Senate and the House, if you look at the fiscal year 24 and 25 appropriations, are very close. On line 244, the historical grants, both are at $15 million. Statewide history programs on line 245, there's a difference of $500,000. The House has a carve-out of historical buildings for $400,000. The House also has another carve-out on line 247 for making Minnesota book, and that's $50,000 each year. Then under history partnerships, there's a difference of $390,000. The Senate is slightly higher than the House on that. Line 249, both the Senate and the House are the same. Line 250, digital library. The Senate is at $800,000. The House is at $750,000. And then on the Senate has sort of 3 set-aside projects. On line 252, the Litchfield Opera House for $100,000. Line 253 is the Dakota County Historical Society for $275,000. And then line 254, the Olmsted County Historical Society for $900,000. So the Senate has a total of $38.715 million, and the House is at $37.5 million. Next, I'll go to the Department of Education. Both the House and the Senate for the regional public libraries are the same at $5.5 million. And then the House has a water safety grant program at $250,000, and the Senate does not have that. I'll keep on going through the Department of Administration. Much of the line items are pretty close. Under Minnesota Public Radio, the House is at $4.2 million, the Senate's at $4 million. Ampers Public Radio, again, the House is at $4.2 million and the Senate is at $4 million. Minnesota Public Television, the House is at $9 million and the Senate is at $9.92 million, and of that, the Senate has a $1 million carve-out for the Minnesota Military and Veterans History Stories. On line 265, the Wilderness Inquiry Canoe Mobile, the House is at $1.1 million, the Senate's at $950,000. The Como Zoo on line 266, the House is at $3.5 million and the Senate is at $3.4 million. Science Museum of Minnesota on line 267. Again, very close. The House is at 1.7 and the Senate is at 1.6. Appetite for change on line 268, both House and Senate are at $200,000. The Lake Superior Zoo on line 269, the House is at $300,000, the Senate is at $200,000. Great Lakes Aquarium, the House is at $500,000, the Senate's at $200,000. The State Ban on line 271, both the House and Senate are at $50,000. Next, we'll go through some Senate-only items. Starting on 272, there's the Veterans Memorial Park in Wyoming at $154,000. Line 273 is the Great Northern Festival at $300,000. 274 is the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities at $100,000. Line 275 is the Minnesota Council on Disability at $550,000. Line 276 is the Keller Regional Park at $850,000. Line 277 is the China Friendship Garden at $850,000. Line 278 is the Camilla Gage Artist Fellowship at $110,000. Line 279 is the Minnesota African American Heritage Museum at $360,000, and of that, there's a carve-out of $110,000 for the Caldwell Fine Arts outdoor mural. So the total amount for the Department Administration on the House side is $24.75 million, and the Senate is at $27.794 million, a difference of just over $3 million. Next, I'll go to the Minnesota Zoo, where both the House and the Senate are at $4 million. And I'll turn it back over to Mr. Hagemeyer to go through the House part of the Humanities Center.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Mr. Hagemeyer.
Moving on, line 285 is the Humanities Center. The line 286 is Humanities Center Programs. The House has $4 million. The Senate has $3.07 million. And then you'll see basically the next changes are related to the children's museums. On line 287 and 288, the House created a grant program with two different pots of money, one for grants over, and I see I have a typo in my chart. It says $2 million operating budget, but I believe in the bill it's now $3 million. So there's $650,000 for grants for children's museums over $2 million operating budget, and then there's $2 million for grants for children's museums with operating budgets under $3 million. And then I don't know if Mr. Mueller wants to take back over.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, on the Senate side, the Senate has a total of, you'll see on line 289, it's $2.65 million total for children's museums, but they are all listed, you'll see, starting on line 290, starting with the Minnesota Children's Museum in St. Paul at $1 million. And then there are a bunch of separate children's museums listed, starting on line 291 all the way down to 301. And each one of those children's museums has $75,000 per year or $150,000 for the biennium. The next one I'll go to is line 302. Well, this is a House item, but is the outreach on humanities grant opportunities. The House has $75,000 for the outreach for grants. The House also has a capacity building appropriation for $1.5 million. Then I'll talk through a little bit on the Senate side about the community identity and heritage grants, the way they're set up. And then I'll turn it back over to Mr. Hagemeyer, and he can talk about the House setup of that. On line 304, the Senate has just over $9 million for the community ID grants, and this is the open grant program. There's $2.5 million the first year and then $6.5 million the second year. And the reason why the Senate has lower amount in the first year is because you'll see starting on lines 306 all the way down to 319. The Senate names a number of specific grants in the first year, but does not name them in the second year. And that's why the Senate has a higher amount, $6.5 million, available in the second year for the community, would be the open grant program. And when we go through the language later on, we can talk about how the open grant program works. So I'll turn Mr. Hagemeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, so the House on Line 304 has the Community Identity and Heritage Grants, a total of $11.6 million in the first year, and then the House did not specify any direct recipients of grants, so it's all a competitive process, so you'll see the blank lines below there. There is a carve-out of $25,000 on Line 305 for urgent community needs. And then if you go all the way down to Line 320, the House has $400,000 and the Senate has $250,000 for competitive civics grants. And then on Line 321, the House has $30,000 for a fiscal accountability study. And then I believe on Line 322, the Senate has a $75,000 per year appropriation for the Bakken Museum. And then the next area would be the Indian Affairs Council. All the same programs are funded at slightly different levels. You'll see 325 grants to Minnesota tribal nations to preserve Dakota and Ojibwe languages are both appropriated at $1.7 million. On Dakota and Ojibwe Indian Language Immersion Educational Institution, the House has $1.3 million. The Senate has $920,000. On Line 327, the Dakota and Ojibwe Indian Educational Immersion Efforts, the House has $1.2 million. The Senate has $1.7 million. The Language Working Group, both the House and Senate have $100,000. And then the Protection of Indian Graves Act, the House has $300,000 and the Senate has $180,000. In total, the appropriations to the Indian Affairs Council are $4.6 million from both the House and Senate. And then Line 331 is the Department of Agriculture. Both the House and Senate have $800,000 for the county fairs grants. And then I can just finish up here too. The Senate has $100,000 for the University of Minnesota Extension Office 4-H shooting sports grants. So in total, the House has $800,000 for the Department of Agriculture. The Senate has $900,000. On Line 337, you'll see a small appropriation of $4,000 for the Legislative Coordinating Commission for the legacy website that tracks all the appropriations. If people are interested in looking at things that have previously been funded. In total, you'll see the House appropriated $195,046,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25. The Senate and that left a 5% reserve. The Senate appropriated $191,952,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25. And if you add in the $3,094,000 in 23, they both appropriated the same amount of money and ended at a 5% reserve. And that's all I have on the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer and Mr. Mueller. And so we'll transition to the language portion. So you'll find that in your packets, members and the public. I'm sure it's available to everyone. So we have Ms. Taylor, Ms. Davis, and Mr. Stanley. So I don't know how you want to. Okay. Ms. Taylor, go ahead, please, when you're ready.
All right. Mr. Chair and members, we're going to walk through the language with the House on the left side and the Senate language on the right side. And what I'm going to do is just point out the non-technical language differences. And the first of one of those is on R19. This would be the CPL grant program. If you look on House side, on lines 20.21 through 20.22, 20.26 through 20.28 and then 20.36. This is the CPL program writer, and this is the $3 million carve out that was mentioned for first time applicants. It would also let the council use a portion of their administration funds for outreach in support of the first time applicants.
Ms. Taylor, just one second, please.
Yeah, can you do that again? I wasn't quite on that page. Page, the line numbers, Ms. Taylor.
Thank you, Representative Becker.
It'd be on page R19. On the House side, lines 20.21 and 20.22, 20.25 through 20.28, and 20.36. This is the CPL carve-out for first-time applicants. And then on the Senate side, there's some Senate-only language Mr. Stanley wants to go through.
Mr. Stanley.
Mr. Chair, members, on the Senate side, on lines 20.36 to 21.3, and then on 21.15 to 21.23, you'll see some language that appeared the last time this was in a legacy bill. This is language that requires that lands acquired as part of the CPL program be open to hunting and fishing. And then the second set of lines that I mentioned requires that in awarding the grants, DNR has to prioritize land acquisition requests that are near or associated with existing WMAs, SNAs, and AMAs. I'll turn it over to Ms. Taylor.
Ms. Taylor.
The next piece I'd like to point out would be on page R24. There's some House-only language, subdivision 10, opportunities for youth. This provision would require recipients to contact the DNR to determine if there are some training and educational opportunities for diverse youth. And then it would also require recipients to make contact with the Conservation Corps and then submit a copy of the written contact to the Lessard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council. The next piece I'd want to point out would be on R26. There's House Only Section 3. If you continue on to R27, you'll see the new language being added is on lines 29.19 through 29.20. This increases the maximum per diem allowed for the citizen members of the Lessard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council to $125 per day. There's another House Only Section, Section 4, on the bottom of that page, continuing on to the next page. On lines 30.28 through 30.30 on R28, there's some language that would require projects to include an assessment of whether the funding celebrates cultural diversity or reaches diverse communities, including reaching low and moderate income households. House Section 5 and Senate Section 3 are the same. And then if you continue on R29, House Section 6 and House Section 4 are similar. There's just some technical differences, so I'm not going to go through that. And we can skip ahead to the Clean Water Fund article, which starts on page R37.
Ms. Taylor, just the room's kind of, I mean, I think the public's kind of having a hard time, so
sure.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
These microphones are a little different, so if you can really lean into it, I'm sorry.
No problem. I'll try to speak louder. So we're in the Clean Water Fund article now. The first difference would be on R39. There's a House-only subdivision 4, increasing diversity in environmental careers. And this would state that agencies should work to encourage a diversity of students to pursue careers in environmental and natural resources when implementing the appropriations. The next section would be on R41. And this is a Senate provision, if Mr. Stanley wants to.
Mr. Chair, members, at the bottom of R41 on the Senate side, you'll see the carve-out for the Riverwatch program that Mr. Mueller mentioned. And the next change of significance that I'll draw your attention to is on page R51. You'll notice that there are differences on the House line 56.5 and Senate line 53.5. This is the amount that the Board of Water and Soil Resources has to consider contracting with Conservation Corps for. The House says that they must consider contracting for up to $850,000 each year, and the Senate has $750,000 for that amount. Then if you'll turn to the next page, R52, Mr. Chair, at the top of that page, there is an appropriation to the Department of Health, and what that appropriation is for differs slightly between the House and the Senate. On the House side, you'll see that the appropriation is for the development of health risk limits. And on the Senate side, this is at the very top of the page, you'll see that it is for something slightly different, health-based, Minnesota-specific water guidance. I'll turn it back over to Ms. Taylor.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, the next one would be on R53. You'll see on lines 5.19 through 58.21 that there's some additional contaminants in this Met Council rider, and this would be regarding threats to drinking water. The next thing I would like to point out would be on R55. There's a house only section 12. This would establish a goal under the Clean Water Legacy Act that waters achieve their designated uses by 2040. This is similar to language the House carried when there was a more extensive rewrite of the Clean Water Legacy Act. Turning the page to R56, House Section 13, this would increase the per diem rate for members of the Clean Water Council to $125 a day, similar to the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council provision. House Section 14 would require the Clean Water Council recommendations to be submitted to the legislature rather than the governor as they are now. Moving to R57, House Section 15 would require the Clean Water Council recommendations to be annual, starting in fiscal year 2026 rather than the biennial as they are now. House Section 16 would require projects funded by the Clean Water Fund to include the diversity assessment similar to the Outdoor Heritage Fund language. And then if we go to R62, this will be the Parks and Trails Fund. This would be the first significant difference there. At the top of the page, there's House Subdivision 4, Energy and Water Conservation. This states that recipients should prioritize water and energy conservation and use renewables when constructing and building projects funded with the article. Also on R62, there's a house-only paragraph B. This allows the DNR to spend money on their ICANN program, including programs designated for certain diverse groups to experience the outdoors with similar peers. And then the next item would be on R64. Towards the middle of the page, starting on line 69.8, this states that the DNR should work to provide opportunities that encourage a diversity of students to pursue careers in environmental and natural resources when they're implementing the appropriations. The next item would be on R65, House Section 6. This would require the diversity assessment for parks and trails projects, similar to the other two funds. Moving to R66, House Section 7, this would require the Met Council implementing agencies in the county and cities that are charging entrance fees to their parks to provide at least 4 days free of charge in order to be eligible for parks and trails funds. House Section 8 on the next page, this would allow tribal governments to be eligible for the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails grants. House Section 9 would increase the per diem rate for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission members, similar to the other two. And then House Section 10 is similar to Senate Sections 6 and 7. There's just technical differences, although it looks quite a bit different. And then there's a Senate-only Section 8, if Mr. Stanley would like to take over.
Mr. Stanley.
Mr. Chair, at the bottom of R67 on the Senate side, you'll see Senate Section 8. This extends previous Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails appropriation.
And then, Mr. Chair, House Section 11 on the bottom of the page would require DNR in cooperation with the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission to submit a report with some recommendations for expanding access to the tribal governments that were added earlier in the section, and then expand opportunities for cooperating with nonprofits. And then turning the page, there's a Senate-only section.
Mr. Chair, on the Senate side of page R68, towards the top is Section 9, which simply prohibits the use of Parks and Trails fund money from being used to acquire land via eminent domain.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, that concludes the Parks and Trails Fund. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Davis to walk through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, thank you.
Chair and members, Mary Davis from the House Research Department. I'm going to walk through Article 4. We're going to be starting on R69. These first two House-only provisions apply to all of the funding in Article 4. And I'm going to skip anything that's purely technical, but the first one is a water and energy conservation prioritization for buildings that are funded by this article. And the second one is a prohibition on funding organizations or leadership in organizations where the person has had a sexual assault or harassment judgment against them. Again, that's on R69. Moving on to R70, this is in the Arts Board language, the Arts Access Grants. There's a priority language for underserved communities. R70, going on to 71, there's a house-only language that encourages free access days for public arts events and free admission days. Continuing on R71, in the arts education grants, there's a priority for opportunities for K-12 students and underserved communities. And on R71, again, house-only language that provides for the public arts installations. On R72, both the House and Senate provide funding to the regional arts councils. There's a difference in the House language this year and an increase for regional arts councils. On R74, in the Historical Society funding, the House has a provision that is two carve-outs for historical buildings grants and then also to continue funding for the Minnesota Legacy Book. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Stanley to talk about a Senate-only provision.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Mr. Chair. Stanley. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief on at this point. At the bottom of R75 and the top of R76 on the Senate side, you'll see three carve-outs that Mr. Mueller mentioned when he went over the spreadsheet.
Mr. Mueller. Or you already mentioned him. Sorry, got it.
Hi.
Ms. Davis.
Chair and members, Mary Davis. On R76, there's a small change in the library's rider, granting priority for diverse authors and Minnesota-based authors. Then we're going to jump to R82. R82 is the Humanities Center funding. So I'm going to walk through a couple of provisions that are in both the House and the Senate, but just different. There's a difference in the general appropriation rider for the Humanities Center between the House and the Senate. There's a Senate-only provision that prohibits out-of-state travel with the funding. And there's also a difference in the administrative percentages. It's a small difference between the two. For the Humanities Center Children's Museum grants on R83, there's a slight difference in how the funding's awarded, competitive versus direct. Both the House and the Senate fund each of those. In the Community Identity and Heritage Grants program, similarly on R84 and 85, both the House and the Senate fund this program. There's a difference between competitive and direct grants. The House is also funding capacity building grants and a specific outreach cost. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Stanley to discuss some of the other differences.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Stanley.
Mr. Chair, I just want to draw your attention to some Senate language on R85. Specifically, on the Senate side, on line 78.26, the Senate bill provides that these grants must be provided to organizations or individuals that reside or are based in these communities. And then there's also some new language on line 79.4 through 79.9 that requires the Humanities Center to consider the extent to which applicants represent groups that have been underrepresented in past awards of money from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund when they make these grant decisions. And then the final thing I'll point out, Mr. Chair, on page R89, is there's language on the Senate side, lines 82.30 through 83.6, that makes clear that the entities that receive that are named in the Senate language can also apply for the open portion of these grants.
Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Chair and members. Mary Davis. Both the House and the Senate on R89 fund the Civics Grant Program. Again, the difference here is just a competitive or direct appropriation. On R90, there is a house-only provision, and it is a fiscal accountability study for the Humanities Center to do. And now we're going to R92. the very end of that section, there is a subdivision titled Legacy Arts Access Days. It provides that a portion of the funding to grantees should be used for legacy arts and cultural access days to allow families from a variety of economic backgrounds to access programming for free or reduced cost ticket programs and increase the availability of programming supported by funding from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Program. Then there's a Senate-only provision that Mr. Stanley is going to explain.
Mr. Stanley.
Mr. Chair, members, on page R93 on the Senate side at the top, you'll see subdivision 12. This is the language that goes along with the spreadsheet line 255 item that just reappropriates the inadvertently canceled appropriation of the Historical Society from last time. Put it over to Ms. Davis.
Ms. Davis.
And Chair and members, there is a House-only provision on R93 titled Report. It adds a provision to the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund statute, and it requires fiscal agents receiving funding submit a report to the legislature by February 15th of odd-numbered years to the committees with jurisdiction over legacy funds. The goal is to provide funding information, including funds distributed or not distributed, summary information on programs supported by the funding, competitive grant programs, granting information about individuals, entities, or organizations that were provided grants, and an assessment on whether the funding celebrates cultural diversity or reaches diverse communities. And Mr. Stanley is going to explain Article 5.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Stanley.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll be brief on Article 5. This is language that you've probably seen in other bills as well that is just designed to ensure the grantees who receive state funds have the ability to perform their duties under the fund. This language has been sort of evolving as it has gone along, and I'm not entirely sure it's worth going over all the differences, but generally speaking, the House language applies to nonprofits only, whereas the Senate language applies to any type of business organization. And I think I'll just leave it at that unless there are questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stanley and Ms. Davis and the rest of the staff there. That's great. So I'm going to pass it to my co-chair here. Chairman Herr, I know you had a question. So.
Sure. I know all this is probably very, very fast to many of you who are new to this committee. Right. It's fast for me as well. You know, we are not as good as our analysts or our counsel. So if you have trouble understanding any point of them, you know, maybe you could certainly note and ask. Note, and I'm going to go back and note in the one that I may want to have it repeated, and mainly because the language are in legislative form, so sometimes it's harder for laymen to comprehend. So I'm digging it. I'm backtracking right now, but it's a little hard. But so maybe. I want to see if any member have a question while I'm looking through the two sections that I want to ask questions on.
We had two additional members come, and I just want to recognize Senator Morrison. Welcome. And my vice chair, Representative Hussein. So welcome. So is there any member questions that you might have? And certainly, like Senator Herr said, they're available for any questions and that any of us have. And it is quick for me too as well. I've been here for a bit, and it's fascinating to me how, you know, different bodies come up with different approaches, and it's not necessarily bad or good. It's just you know, and so the language is to see them on paper, because obviously we have to have the same language to get to the governor and have them signed into law. So, Representative Herr.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to discuss this. And I really appreciate, I've been at a couple of conferences, and this is laid out really well, so just thank you, staff, for that. I just maybe wanted to ask staff, because I know we did this in Legacy. You did a really great job in Legacy letting us know as a committee what statutorily we have to fund and what percentages of the Legacy Fund statutorily goes to each group. And I don't know if the, maybe the Senate went through this as well, but I think that it would be really good for staff to maybe even in this particular spreadsheet to show us, you know, to maybe record on here so we know. I remember like a third goes to one portion, a third goes to another, and so that we understand when something is where we get to make a decision versus something that is already in statute that we have to comply with. I know that might be, I don't know if the Senate did this, but it was very helpful for me. And so I'm wondering if maybe the Senate could go through some of that, because then I do see that there is a big difference between direct appropriation and areas in which the House, you know, the Senate and the House, and that there was less direct appropriation in the House, which I appreciate. But you know, then it also helps guide us in saying, why do we direct appropriate in some areas when we have that leeway to do that, and why don't we in others? You know, as somebody who's new to Legacy, I will just have to state my consternation with direct appropriations, because to me it was really clear that if you have access, if you have lobbyists, if you have, you know how to navigate the system, you will likely have a direct appropriation. And what the House did was that we created pools of fund that would be capacity building. And I think it's important to note that in one of the lines here, we have emerging needs. And this came out of the fact that when there was the stabbing at Harding, we always call our communities to help us with healing. We call our arts community to help us with trauma and how to address trauma in community, but we don't fund them to do that. And we know that one of the best ways to heal is through art, because art includes culture. And to be able to create pools of funds like that is actually really helpful and addresses community needs. And I would like to see those types of structural changes versus whoever has the most access, whoever has the most ability to navigate, then gets in a direct appropriation. And so I think that that would sort of help us, sort of guide us in this conversation as we move through this conference. And but if you think that that's a different conversation for another day, Chair, I'm you know, I would respect what where you'd like to see this go.
Thank you, Representative Herr. So I think Mr. Hagemar can kind of go through the Constitution that we passed and what set up that way, and the rest of it is a little open. So, Mr. Hagemar.
Mr. Chair, I can go through the ones that I'm aware of. It. The list might be shorter than you think that are actually constitutionally or statutorily directed. Obviously, we know the distribution of the funds are in Constitution for 33, 19.75, and 14.25% for each of the funds. There is a carve-out of the Clean Water Fund that says 5% must be used for drinking water protection, I believe. That's what's in the Constitution. Within the statute and each different funding source, there is a requirement that was added in 2016 or so that 5% of the tax receipts from the most previous forecast can't be appropriated. It just, that's that 5% reserve that we keep in order to manage future forecasts that might be down or tax changes or other bills that affect this. So it keeps the funds positive, hopefully, going forward. And then the only other statutory requirement for a funding level would be for the arts, and that's 47%, and that's listed in statute. Other ones that we've mentioned, like the Parks and Trails Fund, they had a like more formal agreement of a 40-40-20 split a number of years ago. That has expired. I think that was legislatively directed for them to come to an agreement. That technically expired, but they've all been adhering to that since that time. I believe it expired in 18 or 19, maybe, somewhere in that time frame. Otherwise, I think that's all for actual statutory or constitutional requirements, but maybe Ms. Davis has something.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Ms. Davis.
Chair and members, I think one of the other things that Representative Herr might have been looking at is, besides the statutes that govern each of the different funds, there's also general funding statutes from in Chapter 16B that affect how you can do grants as a state agency. And so we did talk about that a little bit in our committee, and I think that might have been what she was referring to. So if you have a chance to look at Chapter 16B, or if you would like a copy of that or something, those are provisions that apply to all grants that go through state agencies.
Thank you. Mr. Hagemar, can you just I mean, I know it, but just say what those first percentages were each. So sure. The 33,
yep.
You know,
so
just so everybody, I mean,
Mr.
We should all know at this point, but just.
Mr. I didn't want to mistakenly say it wrong, that's why I didn't specify that. It's 33% for the Ultra Heritage Fund, 33% for the Clean Water Fund. There's 19.75% for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and then 14.25% for the Parks and Trails Fund.
Mr. Hagemeyer, you've been asked to repeat it one more time. So,
sure. Yeah. So in the Constitution, it specifies that 33% of the proceeds go into the Outdoor Heritage Fund, 33% of the proceeds go into the Clean Water Fund, 19.75% of the proceeds go into the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and then 14.25% of the proceeds go into the Parks and Trails Fund. And each of those has their own fund within the state accounting system, so any revenues and appropriations come out of those, so there's not drawing off a different account. It's not one pot of money that we're pulling and appropriating out of.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Representative Hurd.
Just one more follow-up, Chair. And to the point about what is the other piece, and I'm sorry, Ms. Davis mentioned, sorry, my apologies. It's so early. We're up so late. On the piece, on that compliance piece of it, because I, you know, as somebody who comes from a finance background, I would like to maybe at the next conference that we get to, that all of the organizations that have a direct appropriation, I would like to see 990s for those. I would like to see if we did the due diligence to understand, do they have the capacity to execute on the grant? I want to see, you know, the assets of the organization, how they executed on previous funds, because it is important that when we then are direct appropriate to an organization, that we do know that they, one, can accept those funds, and two, that they can actually execute on those funds, because I think we set ourselves up for some dangerous positions if we don't do that. And so we need to do the due diligence on our side to ensure that we're complying with what it is that Ms. Davis mentioned. So that would be helpful for me as somebody who cares about that.
Thank you, Representative Hurd.
Can I respond to Representative Hurd?
Certainly. Co-chair.
Yes. I agree with Representative Hurd, but at the same time I also trust in our grantor. Who likely will be the Humanity Center or Department Administrator who have history of collecting the, is it 990? And many forms. So, you know, the form, you know, we don't have the capacity here to collect the form, but our agency will have the capacity to do that. So just little information.
Mr. Chair. I'm referring to the direct appropriations that we do. And I trust our agencies do a good job, but we as people who are actually the ones appropriating the money, we should know. And we shouldn't say, now I've already directed appropriate funds to an organization or institution, not knowing that that organization should or can take that. So I would like to see that for us, because that's good due diligence on our part. And I trust that in the grants pieces of it, our agencies do an amazing job. And they actually do an overly amazing job, because they are trying to ensure that those funds are used as directed. And so I'm just referring to the ones where we are directly naming and appropriating ourselves on these forms.
So I have a question for from Representative Muhammad. Senator, I'm sorry, Senator. I didn't want to.
It's okay.
Promote or demote you or whatever we are. I got to bet our team was giving me a hard time, because you have, like, golden plaques, and we have, so, but not.
I made them myself.
So my team was giving me a hard time that we have these.
So a few, I have a question, but few thoughts on this issue, because this isn't the first time I actually heard it. We heard a lot about it in the Jobs and Economic Development Committee, and Senator Housie and I are not new to this. I think direct appropriations are important to particularly communities of color. I think it's clear that, especially in the Legacy Community Committee, we've been left behind. And I would, my question is, how many of these organizations that have lobbyists have actually gotten money direct appropriate, have gotten direct appropriations previously, number one, because I think that's like, that has been somewhat of an argument. The other thing I want to mention is we did 99s in our committee, and I think, first and foremost, I trust our agencies to execute this the right way and get it done, and I trust our communities to be able to do the right thing when it comes to this issue, and so I will not undermine that. And we're giving direct appropriations in the House bill to big organizations like the Minnesota Radio, to the Children's Museum, and so the people we are leaving behind are the communities of color.
And so that's why direct appropriations were started in 2016 and why it's important. I know Senator Hur has been fighting for that for a long time, along with Senator Champion. And so I just want to amplify that to make sure that that is centering us. And when we take away direct appropriations, the money that we're taking away is going to be coming out of the communities of color.
Thank you, Senator Muhammad. To that first question, I'm not sure that we know the answer, or staff would know. Us as members might have a sense of who's represented by lobbyists, but I don't know that staff would have no understanding of that, or I don't know that I can give a number. So, good question, though. Senator Hur, I think you had actually had a question originally.
The explanation went very, very fast, and I, let's see, I have, you know, on page R66, you know, I think R66, and I think that's the Clean Water Council, right? That's a free part day. Also, R56, starting with R56. Starting with R56 to R66, about 10 pages, roughly. But like there's chunk that, you know, talk pretty much the language are on the House side and not on the Senate side. And so, and that's in regard to Clean Water Council.
Okay.
Maybe the... maybe you can slow down and explain that. And tell us the difference between the House side and the Senate side, since we don't have language on our side.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hurt. Ms. Taylor, I'm sure you heard the question and can help us through that.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, I'll go through, I think it's R56 through R66, just the House sections on those. The first is House Section 13. It's a House-only provision. This increases the per diem rate, like the maximum, that members of the Clean Water Council could receive, and that would be $125 a day. This is similar to other sections also in the bill. Section 14, this would require the Clean Water Council recommendations that they've been submitting to be submitted to the legislature rather than the governor. And then going to R57, Section 15, this requires the Clean Water Council recommendations that they've been submitting to be submitted annually starting in fiscal year 2026. So it would not affect the appropriations in the bill currently, but would be going forward. Section 16 would require projects funded by the Clean Water Fund to include a diversity assessment. There is similar language in the Outdoor Heritage Council. The assessment would be whether the funding celebrates cultural diversity or reaches diverse communities, including reaching low and moderate income households. And then House Section 17 and Senate Section 12, these are similar. They look like they're very different, but it's just the House did not pull in the old language, and just it's just an extension. But they basically do the same thing. It's just technical differences. And then everything is the same until R62 at the top of the page. The House has a subdivision 4, and this says that recipients of the Parks and Trails money should prioritize water and energy conservation and the use of renewables when constructing and building projects that are funded with the Parks and Trails Fund that are appropriated in this article. And then on R62, there's House language paragraph B starting on line 66.29. This would allow the DNR to spend money on their ICANN program, including programs to designed to provide underserved and LGBTQ youth opportunities to experience the outdoors with similar peers. The next difference is on R64. There's a House-only paragraph I starting on line 69.8.
This states that the DNR should work to provide other opportunities that encourage a diversity of students to pursue careers in the environment and natural resources. And then on R65, call section 6, this is another provision that would require the diversity assessment, and this would be for the parks and trails projects, similar to the other two funds. Then R66, on the bottom of that page, there's House Section 7. This would require the implementing agencies in the cities and counties that have been charging an entrance fee for their parks to provide at least 4 free days in order to be eligible for Parks and Trails Fund money. And that would be through R66. I can continue if the chair would like.
Thank you for the explanation.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor and Senator Hur.
Thank you.
Yeah, we try to add a lot of language in for diversity and a lot of free days, you know, for different people that are recipients of our money to, and then try to encourage people to get careers, you know, and interest in these areas to try to reach beyond just numbers, but to try to work in. I'm sorry, that's my commercial a little bit, but I'm pretty proud of the work that our committee did there. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Just so that, you know, I like that. I like that part about the career, the DNR.
So I really want to thank staff, and I know you're available for members, and and I appreciate the public being here today and helping us shape this. It's Senator Hur and the rest of us are really lucky. This is amazing funds that we're responsible for. The voters approved this, and I kind of call it sacred money, you know, that the voters actually approved it and still very popular. And it's amazing the work we're able to do, and I'm certain that we'll come out of this with agreement. And I don't know if you have any final comments. The next meeting will be chaired by you, and so I don't know when. He actually hasn't said when he's going to call it, but Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to concur what Senator Sainib was saying earlier, and thank you for being a champion and fighting for those community that there's a lot of organization that are doing the legwork in our community, the people of color, and they have not been funding. So I would like to see what the Senate side's doing, you know, see if we can agree on term and try to fund it for those people that really needs it, that doing the work, like works. And I do see that we trust our organizations, we trust our community. And we're also asking 1099 when it comes to workforce and bonding, and that's not an issue. People has been providing that information, and I would like to see more appropriations, people of color. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Representative Hur.
And Chair, Lily, thank you. And I don't disagree with Senator Muhammad or Representative Hussein. What I'd like to see is just then a criteria for how we're deciding which organization we're directly appropriating to. I know that in my community, there have been a lot of work by communities of color that don't get funding. I don't see them on this list either. So how do we decide then which communities get money and which communities of color, which organizations, and what criteria we're using, because then we're arbitrarily just deciding who gets money. And I don't want to be the one to pick winners and losers. That if we're going to say, okay, then we should direct appropriate this much to this particular community, this much to this other community, this much to LGBTQ community, then that allows me to be able to defend the work that we're doing. But if we're just not arbitrarily picking because I'm closest to an organization, I don't want to be somebody who picks those kinds of winners and losers, because I know that there are a ton of organizations, communities of color doing great work, and I understand the way the structures have worked have excluded them. But then do we continue to uphold that structure when then we decide my organization who, you know, I know, because I do know that I looked at one of the organizations that we direct appropriated to. They were given funds, didn't use all the funds, and now they're asking for more money. And there's funds that they were allocated they don't account for in their 990. That's a real thing, and that's one of the organizations named in this. And I don't want us to be in that position. It's not because agencies don't do their job. So as long as we have a criteria as to how we chose these organizations, why we chose those organizations, and why certain communities are represented and certain communities are not, because I can tell you in the AAPI community, we're extremely diverse. So if I don't want to give three things to Hmong people and nothing to the Karen community, nothing to the Vietnamese community. Nothing. And like when we start going down that list of whose community gets represented, we come into that really tough space. And how do we then say, well, we gave some community money and we didn't give others, and that there somebody's more worthy and somebody's not. I completely understand how this system has worked and who's been left out. But I just need to be able to understand what is the criteria we're using in order for people to get a direct appropriation. And that would really help me out. And so I just want to make sure that I put that out there. It's not that I disagree with my colleagues. I completely agree. It's just that I want to make sure that it's not arbitrary how we're choosing to do that. And that would be helpful for me. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair.
A lot of hands.
Oh. Okay, I'll be a lot quick. No, I appreciate Representative. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Representative Hur's perspective, but I think the reason direct appropriations were created by the members of the Posse Caucus is because what we were doing was not working. And I understand the perspective of we don't want to choose between losers and winners. But in my district, there is an organization that is funded through the Jobs and Economic Committee, and it's called All Square, and everybody knows the work that they do. They don't have a lobbyist. They're getting direct appropriation for the first time this session, and I don't have a relationship with them. They knew who their representative was. They felt comfortable coming to me because I represent them and their values, and we're doing the right thing. And so I think when we talk about the idea of losers and winners, we were already losing with what was in place. We were. And so, I think, in the language in the Senate, we have guardrails on it, nine-nines, I'm open to. But whether it's, the Black community, the immigrant communities, poor, I think that what is most important is that we're reflected in these bills. And if you look at previous bills, we just give it to agencies, and agencies do not know our communities. We do because we represent them. And so I want us to keep that in mind.
Thank you, Senator Muhammad. Senator Paul.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. I also want to just agree with Senator Muhammad. This is something that we talked about quite a bit in the Senate, is making sure that we are viewing, as we create policies, through an equity lens. And we have seen that historically our communities of color have been underinvested, underfunded, and not seen. In our competitive grant process with our agencies is not equitable and does not reach our communities. And so that's something that's really important with the direct appropriations. I understand Representative Hurst's comments and concerns, but I also want to caution and say, are we using that same lens throughout all of our different committees when it comes to direct appropriations? Because I know it's not. And so if we're saying that when we do direct appropriations, we want a certain amount to go to certain communities and making sure that it's fairly divided percentage-wise, I can tell you if we do that for this committee, then I would be concerned that are we doing that for all of our committees, which I know it's not happening. So before we start walking down that path for this committee, I would say I want to walk us back and say then we're going to have to start thinking about our other committees. But I do want to just say that a lot of the people that have come to us on the Senate side for direct appropriations, they don't have lobbyists. They're not experienced people. They come because they say we've never seen so much people of color in the Senate and in the Capitol. And finally, it's like seeing someone that looks like you, that understands the difficulties in your community, and say, can you finally help us? And that kind of beacon of hope. And that's why I think now more than ever, we have had more people come to us from communities of color advocating for their community and for the work that they do. So I just wanted to speak a little bit to that. Thank you.
Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank my fellow conferees. I hope the public is reassured that we're going to have a vigorous conversation and make really well-informed decisions about this legacy bill. So I just wanted to comment, and I feel confident that we're going to end up creating a really good bill. Thank you.
So, Senator Hurd?
Chair Lilly, maybe I know that we just stated our differences here on the two bills, but can someone give a scope? And I'm sure I can find it out from, you know, from my counsel, you know, but just a little short brief summary of the major differences between two bills. If somebody can give, like, 1 minute summary, maybe by the council, or will we have that ability, or would you be able to, so that we can, you know, like you and I know, but maybe members who are new to this committee and maybe they're not going to have time to look at this whole bill complete. So we have a, you know, like a couple major differences that are in this to the House bill. So if someone can give us a run through, and then we can adjourn after that, I suppose.
Thank you, Senator. Maybe I'll just kind of try it. I think I don't think it's fair to staff maybe to put that on them. So in the Lessard-Sam space, you know, we're very, very similar. We made some changes on the grant, the small grants program. They have this amazing grant program, so we made a few changes there. In the clean water space, it's very similar to the the council recommendations. I'm sorry if I don't cover everything, my apologies, but we switched the funding in the future to have a report come to us every year, like much like the Lessard-Sams does, instead of doing it biennially, and that honestly is controversial. And you know, the agencies, I don't think, have a great appetite for that. But, you know, we just want legislators to be more involved in the process. What else is there in the water space? The goal, we set a goal. I don't think that's controversial. We might have to change it to a different number because I think 2040 is unachievable, but it sounds like it'll be 2050 that we propose. Anything else in the water space? Okay. The parks and trails were very similar. And of course, as we're hearing now, I think in the arts and cultural space, we did tweak the arts board. Our goal was to try to get more money to some of the smaller groups and to communities. And then of course, the arts and cultural space is the big one, which we're all very much paying attention to, clearly by the discussion this morning. And, you know, there's great love. I'm going to throw in a little pitch for the proposal we had with Mr. Lindsay. I think 120 grants went out to small groups. So it wasn't like grants weren't going out. There was good work. And every year we've tried to improve it. And that's what this is, too. So I'm hoping that we can come to an improvement in the bill, and every year has gotten better. So I'm sorry, that's my pitch for what's in the bill and a little commercial there, too. So anything else with that? I just want to thank everybody for coming, and I really appreciate your being on this and really caring about this space. It really is important. There's huge things like public safety and HHS bills and education, but this is really important for Minnesota, for our quality of life that goes to parks and trails and arts and clean water and hunting. And go ahead, if you have a quick comment.
Chair Lilly already said earlier that the next will be done by me from the Senate side, and so look forward to that. You know, it could likely be to tomorrow, but we'll see. I need to get advice from my staff first, but it could be tomorrow or next week. And we want to get this committee as an example of quick peace in the valley, and but solid good peace in the valley. So. Look forward to hear from me and you.
Thank you, Senator Hur, and certainly the Senate team and members, and to the House members and staff and our team. Thank you all. And with that, we are adjourned.